From Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 9, do you not know that in a race all the runners compete, but only one receives the prize? So run, that you may obtain it. Well, for the first time in about 6 months, tomorrow night, I do not have a softball game. The regular season ended about 3 weeks ago, and then there's a four-week tournament, double elimination tournament. This past Monday, my team got double eliminated. It was, in fact, the first team to get double eliminated. And now that I think of it, this has been my 10th year playing in that softball league, and we've only gotten past the second week of the tournament once, and then we got beat. So I was talking to one of the guys that's on the team that beat us, and who's a very good friend of mine, and I kind of put my hand on his shoulder and trying to be philosophic about this. I said, well, I guess winning, playing, and losing is the next best thing to playing and winning. At least you're playing. And I get the idea that that's something of the sentiment behind this rather odd passage in Paul's letter to the Corinthians. All the runners compete, but only one wins. There's only one winner. And so you should run anyway. It's almost, it's an exercise in futility in one sense. But having the benefit of retrospect, knowing how the Jesus story ends, it seems to me that what he's saying is all the runners are competing. One obtains the prize. And oh, by the way, we know who that is now. Jesus has obtained the prize. And in the here and now, in the day-by-dayness of living life together, stay in the game. Keep running. Experience what there is on the way to the reality of Jesus' victory. It's sort of like TiVoing a football game, and when you start the replay, you learn the final score. There's still rationale and reason to watch the game because there's much to be learned in the process. And that's what I want to talk about today, the process of getting in the game, even though we know how it ends. Get in the game of life because, for reasons that have always largely escaped me, the whole span of human life is way longer than the little tiny piece of it that we get. And yet, to be able to bring significance to the little piece of it we get means to appreciate the fullness of what there is. I think Paul is saying, through metaphor, get in the game because there's great joy to be experienced. And we don't stop and think about that very often. I can remember, and I expect you can too, but I'll bet no one has thought of it in years. One of your earliest memories as a child, including perhaps meeting a puppy for the first time, maybe getting even knocked over, licked in the face, and the laughter that goes with that. And every kid, if not that specific moment of joy, experiences some sort of serendipity that involves a puppy or a bicycle, where you go from training wheels to two wheels, and that wobbly independence is exhilarating. That's what I'm talking about. That starts even before we realize the depth of life. We experience this amazing joy, And we move through varying levels of that similar thing, getting long division for the first time. Ah, finally it sunk in. Among my top five vivid memories of my youth comes from seventh grade, and what I thought was the absolute cutest girl in eighth grade consented to hold my hand. And I will never forget what that felt like. Now, it wasn't too long after that then her peers told her how uncool I was, and that was the end of it. But I will never forget the moment. I had these moments of exhilaration and joy, completing an educational experience, landing that job, when you hang up the phone or however it is you find out that they picked you, they picked you for that. And you get promoted and you wind up with a family and all of those little moments that add together to what you think about when it comes time for Thanksgiving. And even as we move through life, you know, not only experiencing life as a five-year-old ourselves, but watching five-year-olds experience life with us, you know, when you haven't seen one for a while, and they run up and, you know, throw their arms around you. That's the sort of thing. That's why you get in the game. That's why you get in the game. And even as, you know, life moves beyond, you know, we collect people in our lives that are our friends and people who love us even, and you know, it's sort of like holding hands for the first time when someone you've loved for a very long time and loves you anyway forgives you for when you really stepped in it. You know, that's the sort of experience that Paul is talking about. Run that you may obtain it, that you may obtain in this life the reality of what God intends in the next life. So that's the first reason, even though you know the final score, to keep watching the game. Keep watching it. Keep playing it. Get in the game, for there is great joy. Oddly and paradoxically, one of the reasons to get in and stay in the game is there is also great sorrow to be experienced. You know, it's the other side of deep love. And out of the experience of deep sorrow and figuring out how to work your way through it and cope with it comes great empathy. And that strengthens and empowers friendship and even deepens love. I've got a wedding prayer that I always use, and I've been doing a lot of weddings lately, so this has kind of been in the forefront of my thinking. Toward the end of a rather lengthy prayer on behalf of the couple, and this sort of comes along as fair warning, we ask God collectively to, quote, give them enough tears to keep them tender, enough hurts to keep them humble, enough failure to keep their hands clenched tightly in your hand, and enough success to make sure they walk with you. Three out of the four things we pray for incur great pain. Tears brings forth tenderness. Hurts bring forth humility. Failure, even. Failure drives us to reach out to those who hold us and hold us up. Well, that's how we get through things. Get in the game and get through and learn. And learn what great strength you have within you, strength beyond what you would have imagined you had, even when you experience great sorrow and you come through it, sometimes hand in hand again with someone who will show you the way and take you through. Get in the game, because there is great joy throughout the course of even this relatively short number of years. There's also great sorrow, for it is the other side of joy, and they work together to give us strength and strength together. And finally, and maybe most importantly, you know, in light of the more or less day-by-dayness of life, when there isn't necessarily a moment of great joy or great sorrow, use that time to put things in perspective. Jesus uses a metaphor that I'm going to borrow and then completely take out of context. He says that God will separate wheat from the chaff, and he's talking about the end of time. Well, I'm not. I'm talking about the moment in time that we are right now. And it's useful to separate in our lives wheat from chaff, the important stuff from the stuff. I remember Ben Bernanke is a former chairman of the Federal Reserve, and he was quoted in an interview when asked, how did you get that job? And he said, well, I was minding my own business, teaching econ and avoiding faculty meetings. And then I got a phone call. Well, I don't answer my phone, but I do teach sociology and when I can avoid faculty meetings. And I couldn't this week. I couldn't avoid it. I got a faculty meeting on Friday, and in the run-up to that was all manners of email about what we were going to be talking about and how that conversation needed to be shaded and shaped and all that. And some of those emails were useful and some were not, and some were really not. But, you know, wheat and chaff. Well, this is the wheat email. Reminder, department meeting Friday, September 27th, 3 o'clock, Holden Hall 129, agenda attached. Thank you very much. No problem. Got it on my calendar. Good to have the agenda. And a day or two after that, and you can't make this stuff up. This is the quote of an email that went to all of us by a PhD-trained Fulbright scholar who's a colleague of mine. Quote, would a replacement of the entire document with a new one technically be an amendment? as we are not altering a portion of the document but adopting a completely new one to replace the old one, would that be constrained by the rules for voting on an amendment in this case? Chaff. I have no idea what that means. I didn't know what it meant when we talked about it again in the meeting. Seriously? You have to take this stuff with a grain of salt. Separate the wheat from the chaff in your life. And I think that that's something you can do sort of in between these moments of great joy and even deep sorrow. It helps to figure that out. Now, all of us get hundreds of emails that are hard to wade through. Forward, 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 forward. Watch this. And I actually found one in there that was bona fide wheat. And I've actually already linked the link that I received to the website. It's called The Pickle Jar. And maybe you've seen it, and if you don't, you can. It's already on there. It'll be next to the audio of this sermon. The Pickle Jar is a series of slides that are not narrated but captioned about a philosophy professor who brings in a big empty pickle jar to his class and then fills it up with golf balls all the way up to the top and asks the class, is it full? And they, of course, nod. And then he takes a jar of pebbles and fills the spaces between the golf balls with the pebbles. And this works much better when you can see it, but, you know, visualize it for a second. The pebbles fill in the space between the golf balls. He says, full now? Yeah, it's full. Then he takes out a big thing of sand and dumps the sand in the pickle jar such that it fills in the space between the pebbles and all you can see is sand now. Full yet? Yes. Well, he pulls out chocolate milk, pours that in there. Now it's full. He said, this is an object, kind of a children's sermon, really. It's an object lesson for your life. He said, the golf balls, those are the important thing. That's the wheat, to use Jesus' metaphor, in your life. These are the people in your life. You know, your kids, your spouse, your best friends. These are the people in your life. The pebbles, you put them in there. That's the other stuff that has some importance. I mean, you got a home, you got a mortgage, you got a car. You have details that surround your life that are important, but they're less important. And the sand is everything else. Gets in there, just, you know, chaff, as it were. And he says, you know, the thing that people sometimes, they live by mistake when they put the sand in the bucket first. The sand, if you fill up the pickle jar with sand, there's no room for golf balls or even the pebbles. You know, you can't keep the wheels on your life, and the people in your life just become obscured by details. He said, no. Golf balls go in first, and they're the ones that are most important. And in a sense, that insight is an illustration of what I think St. Paul said when he said, run that you may obtain the prize. The prize is the knowledge that we've been placed in the company of really fine people in our lives. Not all of them, but certainly people with whom we exchange love and care and compassion and joy and empathy. And that's where you should focus your energy. And run that you may obtain it. Run that you may obtain it. And the rest, well, imagine ultimately God separating the wheat from the chaff and that it's all in heaven golf balls. Well, that'd be all right with me. But you get the idea that God has chosen to win the race. And even though that makes all the rest of us losers in a sense, because Jesus wins the prize, and then for no other reason that he loves us and is gracious and values forgiveness, he gives the prize back to us. We become the winners of that prize because of what he lost on the cross. Run, that you may obtain the insight of how valuable each moment is and how valuable each person in your life is. Oh, and oh, by the way, one of the philosophy students asked the professor, what about the chocolate milk? And he said, well, no matter how busy and chaotic your life can be, there's always room for chocolate. There's always room for chocolate. Amen.